This week's episode of the FitCast is brought to you by xfmuscle.com. You can check them out for some great deals on the best tasting protein powder out there. Again, don't forget to mention the FitCast when you place your order.
Hello, welcome to this week's episode of the FitCast. This is episode number 199.5. I'm Kevin Larrabee, and along with me is Jonathan Fast Doctor. How you doing?
I'm doing pretty good, Kev.
So, again, if you listen to the off-topic discussion, a couple swears in it. If you listen to last week's show, I apologize. For some reason, I apologize. I didn't have my my proper mic input selected, so it sounded like I was in a cave recording. So that's my fault. And today I'm using a headset, which might get us about halfway there, because I don't have my setup fully put set up. Yeah, basically, and because I moved my office around a little bit, but we do have some cool stuff coming up for you this week. As we've already mentioned before, we are going to have a great podcast coming for you with episode 200 with guests Dan John, Alan Aragon, and Lou Schuler. So if you have any questions,
pretty epic lineup.
It's pretty decent.
It's pretty epic.
So make sure, please, if you have questions for any of those guys, and like we've mentioned before, Dan John, if it has anything to do with strength and conditioning, powerlifting, that's the guy to ask. Alan Aragon is a genius when it comes to nutrition, and it's like no BS with Alan. He is not afraid to speak the truth and speak his mind. And then also Lou Schuler, who is always fantastic guest to have on to talk about strength training, talk about the fitness industry. Kind of, he always likes to we always like to kind of ask his thoughts on how things are trending, because he is he definitely has his ear to the rail when it comes to that stuff. So
you kind of did a super lineup, like you said, okay, what do we have in place right now, and then I'm going to multiply that by like a bajillion, and those are going to be the guests.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We got all that stuff coming up on next week, and next week is going to be a big week for us, because not only do we have a great episode 200, but we're going to be relaunching the fitcast.com. Things are kind of time is freeing up for myself, so I am able to put some more work into the fitcast.com stuff, and it's going to be a place where I refocus a lot of my efforts to make it much, much bigger. So what you guys can expect from that is, obviously, we're going to have the podcast every single week. We're going to be having a blog or an article up pretty much every single day, and I know I've said that in the past, but I'm getting some help this time. We are recruiting writers to write some stuff, including John's going to be writing some stuff. We'll have Lee writing some stuff. We have some people that we've had on the show that are going to be writing some stuff as well. So we're hoping to have at least, the podcast plus four blogs or videos up for you every single week. And if you do head to thefitcast.com, you can kind of see we're about halfway there. We still have some work. I'm still working on getting the site optimized. But I did end up going through a lot of our old posts and cleaning them up a little bit and reassigning their categories, so it's a lot easier to navigate the website. So if you want all of our fat loss content, you can click on the fat loss tab at the top and you'll get all of our blog posts or articles related to that. So in the end, it's going to be a lot easier for you to use the website. It's a lot cleaner interface, and we're going to continue to grow it and do a lot more community stuff along with that. You'll see what I'm kind of talking about next week once we do get it up and running. One of the cool series that we'll be starting out with is the a series that I'm going to be doing on home gym training, because now that my responsibilities are changing a little bit, I'm going to be training almost exclusively at home, probably 3 days a week is the way I'm going to be doing it. So I'll kind of let you follow me along with that and track it and show you what I'm doing for exercises to mix things up and to keep things challenging. And I've already written up the first three blog posts for that, just the workout. So you guys, if you want to do it at home and follow along, you can do that as well. So that's all great. And we do have a new mascot, Marty, who is coming tomorrow. So very excited for Marty the dog. Talked to Lee the other day. Talked to her 2 days ago. She's doing good. We didn't invite her to the show this week, though.
No. Nope. We did, but she couldn't.
Yeah, no, she's it's Thanksgiving, obviously, here in America, so she is with family for the day, which is understandable. John is on the moon, and I'm in my apartment, so it makes a lot more sense for us to do it and not get torn away from our families. So for this podcast, we're going to be doing something a little bit different. Normally, we do.
You said do.
Yeah, we have our mailbag. We might have a guest on. But what we're going to be doing is a little bit of a retrospective because – and we're going to kind of see where it goes. But we're going to be doing a retrospective to kind of say what we're thankful for in a sense and our favorite memories of these last 200 episodes or so. And you know what? The best thing that I could possibly do is put some effort into this and write down these memories and then find the audio that we're talking about and put it into the podcast. So I have a piece of paper right here. So what we will do is I will try to splice in some audio and give myself a little bit extra work today because why the hell not? Because I love
why
you guys.
Why the hell not?
Kind of like we did for that episode, I think it was like 150, we did a best of show. But this is going to be a little bit different. Hopefully we'll have some different pieces that we can plug in here. But John, do you want me to start? Or do you want to start? Or
I would love for you to start. It's less work for me.
Oh, okay. Well, you know, first thing I want to say is as we approach this big 200, you know, I hope the audience really realizes what you know, how much we appreciate everything they've done in terms of tuning in, subscribing on iTunes, leaving reviews, going to the FitCast, leaving comments on blogs, sending in questions for our guests, all that stuff. We appreciate it greatly, and we cannot thank you enough. I've said it many times in the past, but if you didn't download this podcast, we wouldn't do it. We would have stopped doing it a long time ago. So, is everything okay, John?
Pretty cool. Like, I mean, I don't know. It's always like a big deal when a TV show hits the 200th episode and stuff. And obviously, this isn't a TV show, but I think that in our own way, I mean, we kind of, you know, we really, really take a lot of pride in recording the show. We enjoy it. It's fun for us, and it's kind of cool that people enjoy listening to it as much as they do. So, I think 200 is a pretty big deal, man.
Yeah, and like we're going to try to signify it with a great lineup of guests and a relaunch. So hopefully down the road you're going to be seeing some really interesting things come from us, not only on the website, but we have been talking behind the scenes about possibly when John comes over to the States doing something that might be considered kind of big. So... we'll talk about that once we get a little bit closer to that. But yeah, in terms of memories, I guess one of the coolest things that I could say in the past that we had was I even remember distinctly the time when we set this up. But I think it was for our 50th anniversary. We had Dave Tate and John Berardi on. Yeah, and leading up to this interview, I was literally scared for my life. I was very, you know, if people listen to, like, the earlier podcasts or even to the last couple ones or, you know, the last 6 months or so, if we have, like, a really big guest on that I've never talked before, you'll tell that I kind of stumble a little bit. Having Dave Tate on, after reading some of the stuff that he has written in the past and knowing that, seeing his training videos, having tons of respect for the guy. You know, I was very nervous to interview him, and I've talked with John Berardi in the past, but it definitely doesn't make it easier. I would say I felt a little bit better that John was going to be on as well, so they could kind of go back and forth. But, either way, it was a really big deal for me. So, that's one of my favorite episodes that I remember. Like, I literally remember walking to my sister's apartment when I was in college to use her internet to do this interview. So, here, why don't we put in a little bit of that interview right here, and hopefully you guys, if you've heard it in the past, it'll be some great stuff to re-listen to, and if you haven't heard it, trust me, it's going to be well worth a listen. Hello and welcome to this special FitCast interview for our 1 year anniversary. Obviously, I'm Kevin, and with me I have two extremely special guests. I am so happy to have both these guys on the line with me. First, I have Dr. John Berardi. Of course, you know him from Precision Nutrition, his book, The Metabolism Advantage, his many articles up on T-Nation. And if you haven't checked out precisionnutrition.com lately, it's been exploding. So first off, I just want to say hi to you, John.
Hey, thanks, Kev. I'm glad to be here and, be here for you're basically a century old in terms of episodes. So that's awesome.
Yeah, we're definitely getting up there. And of course, we have Dave Tate with us, who is the founder of EliteFTS.com, and he's been involved with powerlifting for more than 2.5 decades as a world-class participant, coach, and consultant. And, I mean, if you don't know Dave Tate, you probably shouldn't be listening to this show. So, Dave, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Looking forward to it.
So, you guys, we're going to jump right into it. And the first question is actually about Dave's transformation, and everyone out there is probably, if you read T-Nation, you read about this. And first, I just want you guys to both start off by talking about the story behind Dave Tate's transformation, and whoever wants to start off, please go ahead.
You know, I guess what I'll do is I'll take this up until the point where I called him.
Okay.
Then I'll let him take it from there. basically, I've spent a large part of my life trying to keep my weight up because I competed in the 308 class. It was always difficult for me to do because I do have a very high metabolism. So as I kept trying to increase calories, I couldn't put the weight on, and regardless of what I was trying to do. And I do remember one point in time when I was trying to move from 242 to 275, and I was eating, I'm not going to say totally clean, but I was eating healthy, so to say, and was taking in close to 11,000 calories per day, and I was not gaining weight. Regardless of what I tried to do. And then what I realized at that point is I need more calories. I need to slow my metabolism. So very slow. I started eating worse and worse. I started out just, Pop-Tarts, adding in junk food, because at the time when I was 242, I was eating pretty much like a bodybuilder. And I had a history there. And then the weight started coming back on. Then it would slow down again. And, to make a long story short, within the next 10 years, pretty much everything I was putting in my face was pure junk. And there was, like I've said before, if my vegetable consumption for a day might have been the pickle that was on a Big Mac. And basically I did what I felt I had to do to weigh the weight that I needed to weigh. My performance went up. My weight went up. Everything was successful from that standpoint. Until I decided to, two things coincided. I decided that it was pretty much time to walk away from the sport after 20 some odd years. And I wanted to bring my weight back down. And I had some health indicators and some health problems as well because of eating like shit for so long, which was cholesterol, liver profile. I mean, you name it, it was screwed up. And the problem was what I went back to was how I used to eat before, which had been oatmeal and egg whites for breakfast, chicken breast and rice, just basic old school bodybuilding stuff. And I tried that the first time, and I got to like a day and a half, and then I started puking my brains out. I thought, what the hell is this? Maybe I got the flu. So I let it pass for a few days, and I tried it again. This time by noon, I was puking again. So then the third time, a few days later, I changed the foods. I'm like, well, maybe I'm allergic to the oatmeal, or maybe it's this. And I changed it around, but still kept it pretty clean and made it through about three meals and started puking again. This time, and this is kind of funny, this time, while I'm in the bathroom throwing up, I got a herniated disc in my upper neck, so I kind of pull on that a little bit. So now I get this fierce headache. I feel like shit. My stomach's killing me. I'm sitting in my lazy boy chair at home, and I call my one of my staff members here at Elite, and I'm like, Jim, man, I think I got a problem. And he says, what's that? I'm allergic to eating good food. But I've tried to eat healthy for 3 times now, and I keep getting sick. And, of course, he's just laughing his ass off because he can't believe what he's actually hearing. And I'm kind of concerned because I'm like, well, shit, I have no idea what to do. You know, so I pulled myself together. I went to McDonald's, got Big Mac and fries, and lo and behold, like half hour later, I felt great. That's when I kind of realized that mine has some issues going on that I need some help with. So then that's when I called John, and I'll let him kind of take the conversation from there.
Yeah, no, it's actually kind of an interesting prelude from a couple standpoints. I mean, just you know, the way that Dave tells it is funny, but also, I mean, you know, there's actually a classic metabolism type, which Dave just described. And researchers at the Mayo Clinic demonstrated this with studies. They did a couple of them where they would overfeed people. What they would do is they would give them something like 1,000 or 1,500 additional calories every single day above what their maintenance levels were. So theoretically, and you'd expect this to happen, they should all have been gaining weight. So some of these studies were 8 weeks, some of these studies were 12 weeks. And what they showed what they ended up showing was that they had this group of people that they were overfeeding. Some of the subjects would gain weight like crazy, as would be expected. Others wouldn't really gain anything, maybe a pound or two over the course of 12 weeks with all this overfeeding. So sort of the big issue became, you know, what's going on here? So they were able to stratify the people into two different metabolism types. And there were obviously sort of ranges in between, but there were these people with this sort of hypermetabolism. So metabolism would ramp right up when they started feeding. So that pretty well describes Dave's scenario where, you know, the more he would eat, you know, the more he'd basically plateau. And there'd be a point. I mean, what weight did you start at, Dave, when you made the transition to powerlifting and decided to get heavier? What was your body
weight? I think
weight?
My last show I competed at maybe 215, 220, but I pretty much walked around the off season about 242.
Right.
So my set point was right about there.
Yeah, so you're around 240, and you need to gain an extra 60 pounds or so, and you try and do it, and you just there's not enough hours in the day, not enough room in your stomach, and your metabolism is defeating you every step of the way. So, you know, some people kind of think, you know, especially when they looked at the original diet that sort of Dave had recorded for me, that, oh, that's absurd, and who would do that to themselves, etc. And, Dave, you make this point often, and sort of I echo it, you know. Sometimes to get enough calories – you have to really, really eat calorie-dense foods that, you know, and a lot of calorie-dense foods are the junkier foods. Now, you know, I've often said also, though, that there maybe could have been some room for whether it was like a green supplement or that kind of stuff throughout that time where you could have accomplished both sets of goals, like, you know, protecting your cells and your liver and stuff like that.
Yeah.
You know, but at the same time, you know, I completely understand that scenario, and in part because I was very much like that. You know, when I was young, I was real scrawny, and I wanted to get big for football. So a bunch of my friends, they actually went away to a football camp, and when they came back, a bunch of them were like 20 pounds heavier. They went away for a whole summer, so I was like, I was fascinated. What did you guys do? And so they just basically said, hey, there was this one coach, and he would feed us 3 big meals a day. But we would pretty much eat until we puked. And then when we puked, it was he considered it good because we could eat more. So I was like, well, nothing else is working for me. So I sort of took the same approach. Now, you know, mine was a little bit cleaner than Dave's, but ultimately it was just, you know, how can I get the most amount of calories in? So, you know, obviously we're not about, this isn't a commercial for a healthy lifestyle here. But it's the idea of sort of what needed to be done to sort of achieve a certain level of result. And again, there might be ways to tweak it a little bit because there's a lot of guys listening in who are like, oh, well, hell, I'll give that a try. Dave, how many Big Macs was it? But,
I mean, yeah, well, the other thing that people miss on this too, and they've missed for the whole time, is this was a process that spun, you know, over 12 to 15 years.
Yeah, that's
and
right.
It was only maybe the last 3 years where I was really pushing it to try to get up to 315 and so forth. It started with just, you know, some cookies with my meal, which was still consisting of chicken breast, vegetables, you know, a carbohydrate. I mean, it was a slow turn, you know, to where it was pretty much just total hell for maybe the last 3 years. You know, people completely missed that whole point that, you know, it took a long time. It took a long time to master the skill. But, but you know, it's a little bit different.
Yeah. And like many of the things you do, you achieved a good level, a great level of mastery, Dave.
Oh, yeah. And, I want to point out, too, because John did state this, this was not about health whatsoever. You know, my commitment was to putting up the biggest total I possibly could in the sport of powerlifting. At that time, that was the number one priority in my life above everything else. Right, wrong, or indifferent, that's just the mindset that it was, and it's the mindset that I had. So health was never a single concern, and I don't believe it is for any athlete who's competing at a high level. Now, it should be, but in all reality, most of the time, it's not.
And that's part of what, you know, when I work with new clients, you know, that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to figure out ways to, if they are still competing, work within the confines of their specific goal set, but also introduce elements that can improve health and that can balance out these things as best as we can. So that, you know, that's sort of an objective of mine that I've always had too. But, you know, to fast forward the story, it was funny because Dave and I had actually met a little while prior at a conference up here in Toronto. And, you know, we ended up having dinner with a large group of presenters up in the Sky Dome, which was pretty cool. And then, you know, sort of we met, we talked a little bit, but that was it. And then sort of out of the blue, I get this email from Dave that's just like, hey, man, you know, we have to talk. And, you know, when a guy who's weighing in at like 300 sends you like the one phrase email, we have to talk, you start wondering what you did, you know? And then, you know, we got on the phone and we chatted, and Dave sort of outlined a little bit of the history, you know, including the very graphic puking episode and other things. And, you know, we just decided we'd figure out what was the problem, why he wasn't responding well to the clean eating, and also take sort of a stepwise approach. You know, if you have, and this is sort of just a lesson in coaching, I mean, if you have, let's say, relative beginner, and I wouldn't characterize Dave as that, but, you know, for a coaching lesson, it's you know, it's sort of relevant. But if you have someone whose habits are so far from what you consider, you know, ideal, you're not going to just try and take them to that immediately. So it's not just like, hey, okay, you know, yesterday was 10,000 calories, you know, 80% of that coming from sugar. Today's going to be 5,000 calories and all clean foods with, you know, low glycemic index and et cetera, et cetera. You know, it's just stupid, and the body won't respond well to that, nor will the mind. So the idea is to gradually transition away from that type of eating to a healthier type of style. So, you know, I mean, we sort of gradually moved from, you know, eating sort of dirty, if you will, to eating marginally clean. So just frequent feedings, higher protein, all that kind of stuff. And then, you know, over time, we tried different strategies. I mean, by the end, Dave was very, very clean, very consistent, you know, but again, it took months. I mean, we worked together for months, not just weeks, as some people think it should take to transition their lifestyle. You know, this is a slow, gradual process, and, you know, Dave's results speak for themselves.
Well, great, Dave. Just first off, let's jump into some more of the questions, and I thought we'd start with this one first. What was the hardest part of your fat loss transformation?
There really wasn't one. You know, I've been asked that a lot of times. You know, I guess the only thing I can really fall back on is, you know, the way that I've always been, if it's a decision, it's a decision. You make it, you do it, or you don't.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you're asking somebody else for help, you do what they tell you to do, and you do it. It's pretty much that simple. I mean, if there's any questions or anything that's just not working out, well, then you throw it out at the person that's helping you. They make the corrections, mm-hmm. and you do it. There wasn't one. I mean, it's a confusing question for me to really answer because, you know, it's a challenge. I welcome the challenge, and that's how I kind of took it. But I can't answer that. I don't know.
Okay, so hopefully you guys got a chance to listen to that, and I was able to find an appropriate length clip to put in there. And John, let's toss it off to you, because I know you were on one of our first episodes, but you didn't join us as a host for a while. So how about as a listener before you were actually a host on the show? What are some of the memories that you remember most, possibly even the time that you came on for your first interview?
Yeah, well, I think I talked about that in 150 in my my worst memory snafu.
Oh yeah, that's right, about the your client, right?
About the girls, the soccer players.
Oh, that's what I meant. I meant like the hip thrust or something like that.
You know that they were
okay, I gotcha.
Yeah, that was just a great moment in my life. That was awesome. You know, I remember a lot of the first episodes, especially because in my life at that point, I'd been a trainer for a couple of years, and I was really starting to understand more of the concepts. Like, you know, before that, like when I came into the industry, it was all like functional stability ball crap and this and that, and, you know, still doing like bodybuilder splits and all this stuff. And I think, you know, by the time I had recorded that first episode, you know, I was getting more into like, you know, training athletes at that point. And so my philosophies were changing, and I was becoming, you know, more knowledgeable about like more current trends and more concepts like that. So a lot of those first episodes, like when Eric Cressy came on and Mike Robertson and all those guys, like I remember just being really, it really put an impression on me, you know, listening to Bill Hartman, listening to a lot of those early guests, just as a general, not any specific memory that I have, but just listening and just kind of absorbing it all. And it was really cool. It was such a great way to kind of hear their thoughts, and maybe you've read some of their articles, or maybe you'd even interacted with them online, but to hear them kind of going back and forth and talking about this, you know, kind of new concepts, because in a lot of ways in the industry, they were new. These weren't the things that were being practiced often. You know, now it's like, we're all like, oh, yeah, we're training athletes, and we're doing all this cool stuff, and the TRX, and flipping tires, and, you know, strongman training. But back then, it wasn't done. And so the things that they were discussing as far as mobility and the health, you know, optimization of your athlete, of your client, and things like that, I remember just being really just eye-opening, and it was just great stuff. I would just download the episodes, burn them on a CD or something, and I would listen to them, you know, on the way to work or whatever. So just,
I'm pretty sure you're one of the first people to email me and ask me to start breaking up the episodes if they're over 80 minutes.
Really?
So I'm pretty sure that was you.
Huh.
I mean, we used to get a couple of people who used to burn to CDs, the people who still hadn't picked up an iPod or didn't want to listen on the computer. But, I mean, that was, normally we stayed under an hour, but we had some epic interviews, like the one with John Berardi, that was like 2 hours long. So, we had to, start slicing them up a little bit for some people, back in the forum days. Got requests for that.
But they were just overall, like, just great stuff. I mean, it was just, those early episodes are some really cool things, really cool concepts. And it's interesting to go back and listen to them now. It's not that long ago, but to really hear like what was being said and done back then, and how that wasn't really what was going on in the industry at the time. So it was kind of revolutionary, especially, I'm sure, for a lot of the audience. You know, for people that were on the forums, you know, back then JP Fitness was a really big forum to be on. Those things were a little bit better understood there, but I think for the audience at large, it's probably really eye-opening.
Yeah, and you make a great point. Like, those were new concepts back then, and I think just the whole kind of fitness internet thing, when that blew up, it made it so everyone was able to get the information a lot easier, whether it was through something like the FitCast or just having, you know, everyone had DVDs and books and products and all that stuff, so that definitely helped. But in terms of like previous interviews or anything like that, did anything really, really stand out?
See, I'm just trying to remember, because remember, I went through grad school halfway through that too, so it's like everything is a miss, you know, just a mosh in my head. But
Pumpkin, I didn't mean to put you on the spot.
No, seriously. I mean, I remember. See, the thing is, like, I remember there was an episode with Cressy talking about the shoulder, and I don't remember when that was.
It might have been the maximum strength one. I don't think it was the first one.
I thought it was earlier than that, though, because I remember listening to stuff like in grad school. I was picking up episodes that I hadn't listened to, and they were older episodes. It was just really good. Actually, you know what? One of the episodes, clearly, I think it was, wasn't it like Bill, Eric, and Mike all came on together? Was that more recent?
Bill, Eric, and Mike. No, we had Bill and Mike on at one point together.
That's what it was. Yeah, that was a sick episode.
I don't remember where that was, but I think it was, they were promoting Inside Out, so it might have been titled like Inside Out.
Yeah. That was a ridiculous episode.
Let me see if I can find that. I'll write that down.
Yeah.
But I do remember that because you were on as well, because we talked about your internship there.
Was I on at the time with the two of them?
I'm 99% sure.
No kidding. God, it's all amazing.
It wouldn't have been Assessing Correct, would it?
No, see, I
don't. No, that was just Eric.
So. But are you sure that wasn't like when it was just me and Mike on and we were talking about when I was interning?
Could have been that. I'm not sure.
I think so. I don't remember ever recording with Bill.
Do you know we had an episode titled Pre-Workout Sex? That was when we discussed the Time Art, the controversial Time magazine article, Why Exercise Won't Make You Thin.
Oh, yeah.
That's a good episode.
We kind of dogged it a little bit, but I think that there was a decent point to it.
You know what? I always... I'll see if I can find that, but one of my favorite episodes, or I guess parts, was one that we did have with John Berardi, and then I flipped out on you because you ruined Punch-Out for me.
Yeah, I remember that. That was good.
Ruined Punch-Out for me.
That was a good time. I think that was your first major meltdown on me.
Flipped out.
Yeah, you flipped out. It was hysterical.
Do you remember Crystal Forskett? Remember the model?
Oh my god, I do.
That was a good episode.
Yeah.
That
punch out was hysterical. You flipped out on me, and then all of a sudden, like, the computer went down, and I was like, oh man, we lost the connection. And then I'm like, that son of a bitch, he hung up on me. And I was like, cracking up. I remember writing in the window, like, ha 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 ha, like, over and over again. And then when I went back to listen to that episode, you're just screaming your head off. That was so funny.
Do you remember the live episode that we did? We did live episodes?
Yeah.
I don't know if you were with us for that, but...
No, I think so. Well, didn't we do... Oh.
That might have been before your time.
I'm thinking of when we tried to do that whole, like... recorded and people were able to ask us questions live on what was that, like, we were using like Voodoo or whatever that's called.
Yeah, and that was Uvu. No, that was before that. That was this is even before that. That's when we were trying to do the video stuff.
Oh, okay.
We've definitely had Robertson on a lot. Robertson, Boyle, Cosgrove have been on a lot.
Interesting, actually. Did you ever keep statistics and see who, like,
who's been on the most
guest? Yeah.
It's got to be Robertson.
Yeah,
it's Tuminello's getting up there. I think he's been on three times, but it's been in a very short period of time. Cosgrove's been on three or four times.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just kind of a gray area when you talk about who's a guest and who was like actual a host.
Came on. Yeah, otherwise, like Keith Scott has been on.
Yeah, Keith was the man. He's still putting out great stuff.
Yeah, he is.
Let me think. There was lots of great episodes. I think the original Dan John episode that we did was fantastic. Anytime that he...
I was going to say that video is still like the go-to video.
Yeah, it's gotten over 400,000 views.
That's unreal.
I mean, if you look up Dan John, the second thing on the list is squat video.
Yeah, it is the go-to. I, like, randomly see people talking about it, like, just, and I don't even, like, really go on forums, and it's, like, all over the place. It's unreal.
Let's see.
I picked up a hell of a lot of pointers from that video. Are you serious? Man, that thing is great.
I know. It's probably the best thing that you could ever watch to improve your squat, and it's absolutely free. It
seriously is. And it's like geniusly simple. I mean, it's just like, boom, you're done. You're like, wow.
Man, it's a bummer that I cannot find this episode with Mike and Bill. I'm sure I will be able to track it down eventually. And if I do, we'll play a little clip right here.
Unless you guys have any creative shakes, like, it has to have beer in it if we're going to mention it this week.
Beer?
There's always, every time I'm on this show, beer comes up.
Oh, well, I guess we have a lot of alcoholic listeners. What can I say? But they're staying in shape, though, aren't they?
I hope so.
So we can give them that. But the first question I have to ask you guys, we're going to start off with Bill, and then Mike, if you have anything to offer, please feel free to jump in. First off, Bill. Bill, can you tell us about Inside Out and to whom this DVD would be best suited for?
Well, when we sat down and we really hashed out what we were trying to do, it was a matter of sort of, to use an analogy, you do maintenance on your car to keep the performance at the highest level and to prevent breakdown. And that's essentially what the Inside Out video is all about from an upper body perspective. Mike's been involved in a lower body mobility video, and I've got one that I use for my golfers. We got to talking that there really wasn't anything that involved the shoulder and the upper extremity. And so what we did was we basically just sat down and we started showing each other, you know, different mobility drills that we thought would be appropriate. And we sort of mixed it down into a system that we think is actually a very specific protocol that needs to be followed by anyone that needs to perform at a very high level, whether it be a strength athlete or a throwing athlete or a striking athlete like a martial artist or a golfer or a tennis player, to just simply, one, to maintain function at an optimal level, and two, to raise performance to a higher level while preventing injuries at the same time.
Yeah, with my kids, the groups I'm most interested in working on this with are, like, especially I was at a volleyball tournament yesterday with a lot of the girls, and their posture, their upper body posture is absolutely horrendous just from sitting at a desk all day long and then going out and playing a sport. I mean, these girls are at serious risk of shoulder injuries. So while it's a comprehensive DVD that'll cover the entire upper extremity, you know, I think there's a lot of focus on the shoulder because there are so many pathologies that we see at the shoulder. And so all these athletes that are doing repetitive overhead motions are really going to see a lot of value from this. So I'm really excited to get in and start with those kind of players, like the softball players, the baseball players, and the volleyball athletes that I work with.
Just to continue on that, you know, something you mentioned about posture, the manual becomes essential for those people that function behind a desk most of the day. We really wanted to pump this thing up from an information standpoint, because we know that there's so many people that just go to the gym after being at the office all day, and they're coming into the gym with all these postural issues or you know, scapular mobility problems or rotator cuff weakness problems, and what they need to do is properly prepare themselves before they get under the bar, so to speak, at the gym. And so we felt that was an essential component of this as well.
Sounds good.
What do you think, Kevin?
I didn't really prepare anything. Unfortunately, I haven't had a chance to check out the DVD yet. But don't worry, I'll check it out soon, and I'll throw up a review on the fitcast.com or at least.
You just need to give me your address, and we'll send you a copy.
Oh,
the FitCast
good.
Official certified copy.
Is it going to have, like, a stamp or anything on it? Like,
I don't know.
A signature?
You might even get an autograph if you're lucky.
Oh,
you know?
Yes. You heard it here, folks. If I don't get a signed copy of the DVD, this is going to be flipping out on the message boards. That's all I'm going to say. But anyways, we'll jump into some more individualized questions for the next two. This first one comes from Lisa, and it's directed towards Mike. How did you end up with the nickname the Ass Master?
Well, you know, I would love to think that it's because of all the articles that I've written talking about the need for better gluteal performance, whether it's as far as preventing injuries or improving performance. But I know that's not the real reason. So I'll kind of give you the background behind that, because when I first started writing articles for TMAG, I couldn't understand why I wasn't getting a better response. You know, I'd write this article that I thought was, you know, the best thing ever, and I'd only get like 8,000 people to read it, which, you know, may sound like a lot, but if you see these T-Nation articles, they're getting 20 to 30,000 hits in the first week. So I couldn't figure out what I was doing wrong, and I started going back and reading my articles. I was like, well, the information's great, but, you know, the packaging wasn't all that great. You know, it's like you put the perfect article in, like, a big brown box, and nobody wants to open it. So in all my articles, I started putting these scantily clad women pictures of basically butts in all my pictures. And so about, you know, I did this for literally about a year and a half, and I saw, you know, my rankings go up, and everybody was looking at all my articles. So I was like, hey, whatever it takes to get people to get my point across, if I got to put half-naked chicks in my articles to make people read it and use it, then I figured I would do that. So T-Mag about 2 months ago came up with the nickname the Ass Master, and I've just been running with it, you know, just trying to have a good time, and hopefully people are getting something out of my articles. So that's where the nickname came from. I didn't come up with it myself, and I'm sure my significant other probably isn't too thrilled to have that nickname for her husband, but, you know, what do you do?
That's just good marketing.
That's right.
Yeah. I mean, that's why
you
got
to find your niche, right?
Yeah, that's why we have John Williams.
Whether it's the mobility guy, the Ass Master, as long as they remember my name, I'm okay with that.
Well, that's fair. And we will jump to Bill with another question that comes from Lisa. Are you still using a stand-up desk now that you've had it for a while? Do you like the one that you chose, or would you pick different features now that you've tried it out? Do you use it exclusively, or do you use a regular desk as well? I'm sorry for the long question, but I wanted to let her
I was gonna say, isn't there a limit of one question per person here? How does Lisa get so many?
They're good questions. I'm sorry.
Actually, Lisa's outstanding. She actually did the proofing on our manual, so we owe her a great debt.
Yeah, she did an excellent job.
She can ask as many questions as she wants. I am still using my stand-up desk. I use it primarily for writing. I'm still struggling with standing and reading. I tend to get a little bit more fatigued doing that. I don't know why that is, but so I tend to go back and forth quite a bit more when I'm doing more reading than writing. I don't know if the quality of my writing's improved, but it just seems to be a lot easier that way. And the reason I've done this is mainly because I was doing so much sitting and I was having a lot of hip problems. And the thing that I've noticed the most is just the hip mobility has improved significantly. You know, being as old as I am and worn out, I tend to get a lot of aches and pains just, you know, from being static. So it has helped me tremendously in that respect. As far as the type of stand-up desk they use, my wife works in the trade show exhibit business, so I actually just stole a presentation table, and it's adjustable by height and tilt, so it actually works quite well for me. It's not certainly nothing fancy, and like I said, I just primarily do writing there anyway, so it works exceptionally well. I don't think you need to get too fancy with anything, and frankly, some of the stand-up desks that I've seen I'm not really impressed with. They're just big, tall boxes. I don't think they're very functional. And basically, a little side project that I'm actually working on, we're going to actually try to come up with something a little bit more functional and mobile and things that we can actually market. So this is actually kind of mushroomed into a new project.
Are you going to have to keep it under wraps for now?
Yeah, I do, kind of. But you know, hopefully there's going to be something that comes of it.
That sounds great. Hopefully we can hear about it on the show in the future. But that sounds really cool. I've actually been thinking about trying this out, but I just don't have the setup to do it. But now that you've talked about it, I think I can throw some things together and at
if
least
you put
give
a box
a shot
on your desk.
Yeah, exactly.
You got a stand-up desk. I mean, it's that simple.
There you go. Well, we'll jump into the next question. I'm gonna let Mike take the first stab at this one, but Bill, feel free to chime in. This one comes from Steve. What are your thoughts on how ankle and shoulder flexibility / mobility can affect people's ability to squat? We hear a lot about hips and lumbar position, but rarely hear anything about how mobility in other areas can make an impact.
Well, I think ankle mobility, especially when we're talking about squatting, is hugely important. You know, you watch a lot of these guys that, you know, if they squat in a flat-soled shoe, really can't squat, you know, hardly at all, and you put, you know, an inch like they like an Olympic-type shoe underneath them and taking that ankle mobility out of the equation, and all of a sudden they can, you know, squat well below parallel without an issue. So I think with regards to ankle mobility, it's very important, as well as just keeping the knees healthy. You know, when I talked at LA, I talked extensively about how ankle mobility can help improve the health of your knees. So I think that's important and something we need to take into consideration. But also when we're looking at shoulder mobility, you know, I don't know how much of an issue it's going to be immediately, but as far as bar placement goes, it's going to affect where you can place the bar, how comfortably you're going to be able to squat. And I think, you know, one thing that people always tend to overlook is we put this emphasis on biomechanical efficiency when we're squatting or doing movements, you know, whether it's an extra wide squat stance or whatever. But, you know, all things being equal, just being comfortable with the bar on your back is really important. You know, when I stopped trying to conform my body into a certain type of squat and I just went more with what was natural and what allowed me to feel the most comfortable, my number shot up dramatically. So, you know, I think that's something that's never really kind of looked into enough. But, you know, if you're just more comfortable and you have better mobility in the right areas, you're going to have a better squat and your pounds are going to tend to go up. So,
Bill, anything to add to that?
When you talk about shoulders and such, just a couple things to keep in mind. The width of your grip from your shoulders, the wider your grip, the greater the tendency there's going to be to produce wear and tear on the anterior structures of your shoulder, because we're getting into that closer to that 90-90 position, like a high five position, which is notorious for putting stress on the anterior capsule and your dynamic stabilization that the subscapularis provides. So if you've got any limitation in range of motion and you're kind of cranking your hands back into that position, you find that you have to work to get into that good back squat position. That's definitely something that you want to address right away. And you may need to shift your emphasis away from a back squat for a while until you resolve that issue. Mike's a great example of somebody that had a mobility issue. I think he's the perfect guy to talk to when we're talking about this, because how long ago was it, Mike?
I think we started in like February or March, something like that.
Yeah, and basically it was from the ankle on up, and he's made dramatic strides just in working on his mobility, and his numbers are going to shoot up. I can't wait till you get back into competition and see what you can do with that.
Yeah. I think another thing that we don't look enough into as far as mobility goes is side-to-side discrepancies or asymmetries, because – one thing that Bill picked up on immediately when we were kind of going through all this was all the sports that I played, like basketball and volleyball, put a lot of repetitive strain and increased the stiffness around my left ankle. So side to side, my mobility was not symmetrical. It's fine when you're playing a sport, but if you're trying to do something that should have bilateral symmetry, like a squat or a deadlift, and you don't have it, well, that's when you end up getting into these injury-type issues. So, you know, I think that's something beyond just looking at, you know, gross mobility. We need to look at side-to-side asymmetries and trying to make sure we're balanced, especially with the things that we do every day. So,
very good. We'll jump into next question, which we'll give Bill the first stab at. It comes from John. How important is ankle mobility in improving vertical leap, and what effect does it have?
Actually, this is a really good question. About 80% of your force in a vertical jump, regardless of what type of jump, actually, even if it's a long jump, it's going to be produced from the muscles around the hip. But what you find is that if the ankle's restricted, we're going to lose a great deal of force that's applied from the knee. And really, the only place we're going to produce a lot of force is from the hip. For instance, if you have a figure skater who's in a skate that basically freezes your ankle, you know, there's very limited ankle mobility there. What you're going to find is the way that they produce the height in their jump is so hip-oriented. So ankle mobility becomes a big deal. And what you find find is with guys that have a much greater vertical jump, they tend to have better ankle mobility than the people that don't have a great vertical jump. But then you can take it all the way to the extreme opposite end and have people that have too much ankle mobility, and they're going to have the same problems producing force, because what happens when you have too much ankle mobility, the foot becomes this sort of loose bag of bones. You see people with like fallen arches and things, and their foot just kind of flattens out, and they don't have a rigid lever to push off the ground with when they're trying to produce a maximum height jump. So really what we're talking about is trying to find that optimal range for each individual to produce their maximum vertical jump as far as ankle mobility is concerned.
Yeah, and to piggyback off that, you know, when I read that question, you know, I was kind of thinking along the same lines of Bill, but, you know, you also see, again, we keep talking about the need for ankle mobility, but we talk about all these athletes that have very poor ankle mobility, and so not only do we know that it's going to affect their jumping performance, but as far as their landing and just that general kind of, you know, performance issue, we're always looking for things that are going to affect their long-term performance. So, you know, if they don't have that necessary dorsiflexion, range of motion when they land, and that ability to absorb force, they're going to be at, you know, long-term risk for kind of knee injuries or just soft tissue injuries around the lower extremity. So, you know, that's kind of the way I was approaching it, as more of an injury prevention aspect. But, you know, Bill makes a great point. And all the people that you see that are really, you know, big jumpers have great development around their hips and their thighs. So, you know, nothing can do better than just getting stronger in a lot of cases.
Yeah, in fact, there's a study that shows that. They looked at a bunch of different jumpers, and what they found was that there was no consistent technique. But what they found was that the guys with the best jumpers had the greatest hip and knee muscle strength. So it goes a long way.
Yep.
In sort of an semi-related topic, I'd just like to ask you guys about your opinion on the Nike Free shoes. I've seen some news about it in the last couple of days on the internet, and I saw that Mike was wearing them in Connecticut at Ryan Lee's boot camp, and I just wanted to ask you guys, who would you recommend those for, or would you recommend them in general? And we'll start off with Mike and go to Bill.
You know, it depends on the person. I'd have to evaluate their feet and kind of their walking gait, how they move, things of that nature. But, you know, for me, I really like them, especially when I'm training. I feel like I get a better relationship with the ground. I've got a better idea of what's going on, especially when I do single leg movements. I really like them for that aspect. For squatting and deadlifting, you know, I can't totally get away from my powerlifting ways. So I do have, you know, shoes that I'm more comfortable with performing those movements in. But, you know, for me, and you should know too, I have orthotics that I use to kind of help control my pronation, especially on my right foot. But for me, they seem to work out really well. I like the feel of them. They're very light. So, you know, it would depend on the person, and that's always the best answer, is it depends. But, you know, it's true. So I would have to evaluate the person, see what kind of foot, you know, dynamics they have, and I'd kind of go from there.
Bill, do you have any feelings?
I have feelings. I have never worn them, but I've seen Mike Boyle wear them, and I know Mike Boyle's a really smart guy. So, you know, I think there's probably a good reason to wear them. I'll let you know next time I buy some shoes.
Sounds good. I think I'm on the same side as you with that, Bill. I'm waiting for the next set of shoes, since I spent $100 on Nike Shocks, and I just found out that I shouldn't be wearing them.
So. Yeah, he's got the tightest calves I think I've ever seen. I could tell within 10 seconds of watching him walk. So,
you know, that's affecting your vertical jump, Kevin.
I know, and this sucks because I'm a basketball player, and this is what I do all winter. And now I'm a couple weeks away from it's intramurals, but this is there. You have to keep in mind there's like 50 teams on this intramural league at college, and it's pretty intense. And this is very disappointing. But I've been on the foam roller just trying to get those things back to form. And
I tell you what, Kevin, earlier today I shot some video on some ankle mobility and some soft tissue stuff that you can do yourself, and I'll send that to you, and you can post it for your FitCast subscribers.
That'd be awesome, because this Like, I was depressed for like 2 hours after Mike told me that, and I wanted to go up to him. So, did you see this in LA 2 weeks ago and never tell me?
But, no, I didn't. No, I didn't get enough chance to watch you walk around in LA, but Ryan Lee, I noticed it within about 15 seconds. So,
damn.
It was pretty noticeable.
Well, I guess that's something I will put on my calendar to work on, but we'll just get back to the questions because all the listeners are getting pissed off for getting off track. But the next question comes from Jeff, and we'll start off with Bill this time. Would it be possible to provide a typical progression from getting to a comfortable front squat, or any squat for that matter? Are there specific exercises that should be mastered first? My upper body is comfortable, including the wrists, but I can't get much lower than parallel. And actually, we're going to start off with Mike because I just remembered Bill started the first question. And I want
actually, Mike's probably more appropriate for this one because he's actually made a switch over to some front squats recently.
Cool.
Yeah. Well, with this stuff, you know, I did do a lot of Gray Cook's kind of deep squat progression type stuff. Bill and I were going over that. But, you know, I've worked on a lot of different things. If you review, like, Thomas Meyer's work from Anatomy Trains, like the superficial back line, trying to get everything, just my entire posterior chain basically to loosen up a little bit. I've worked on that. I've worked to loosen up my piriformis muscles. I've improved my ankle mobility. You know, so it's really hard to tell what's going on with somebody until you evaluate them. And generally, you can tell a lot just by their posture, what kind of areas are tight and what, if you loosen it up, is going to shake free and it's going to improve their mobility. But, you know, a lot of people honestly can just put on a heeled shoe and Olympic squat to a pretty reasonable depth. So, you know, I'd kind of start there. If you don't have an Olympic soled shoe, try, you know, just putting some 25-pound plates underneath your feet. Start with like a hip width stance, toe out just slightly, and see where you can get with that. You know, it took me about 3 months, but I honestly had never been able to front squat to a reasonable depth before, and now I can go pretty much buttocks to calves with no issues, and it feels really good. So I'm going to start using that more because not only do I get a nice mobility transfer from that, but I also train my anterior stabilizers. So, you know, with all that, it's a really great exercise. I don't think I'm ready to give up back squats just yet. Again, the power lifter in me kind of, you know, has this inner revolt every now and then, but you know, I've really made a huge transition. I've got to thank Bill because he took a lot of time to help me kind of see where I was going wrong. And, you know, as a coach, it's hard to evaluate yourself. So it's great to have somebody of his knowledge level to come in and look at you and tell you what you need to work on. So that's where I'm at right now. Bill?
Without getting too complex, I think a lot of times just using the exercise you're trying to improve as a corrective exercise is a viable option. You know, most people don't consider putting themselves into to the bottom of a front squat and just sitting there and doing an isometric hold and allowing your active flexibility to improve. A lot of times what you're dealing with is a stiffness issue where there may not be sufficient load or sufficient time for that tissue to elongate. So even just putting yourself into a front squat or widening your stance or externally rotating your feet, so you're using a little bit more toe out, to see if you can get a little bit more depth that way and then progressively realign yourself over time rather than, you know, giving yourself, you know, 500 different exercises that you may not be able to perform adequately without, you know, supervision. Just simply use the front squat.
Sounds good. We'll jump into the next question, which I'm hoping for some interesting comments. I'm sure I could give a couple. But this comes from Red. If you could stop people in the gym from doing one thing, what would it be? And also, what one thing would you have them start? And I think we should keep this training-wise and not just making fun of what people do in the gym. Or if you want to go that direction, feel free.
I haven't been in a commercial gym in over 6 years, so I really don't know. I can only go by memory. I think people do way too many exercises. I think they spend way too much time working on smaller muscle groups when they could just simply be working on more effective exercises. You know, the big ones, the presses, the pulls, the squats, the lunges. You know, if you got to fight for mirror space, there's a pretty good indication that people are working on the smaller muscles way too much. I don't really see a point in it anymore. When you look at my own programming, I think maybe six primary exercises in a workout is probably about the most I've written in quite some time. I'll do some ancillary stuff, but it doesn't take much time at all. But when you talk about primary movements, you know, if you can go into the gym and hit three or four really hard, I think you're going to see a lot more progress than if you went in there and tried to do like a 12 exercise program. Because by the time you get to the end, you know, you just don't have any juice left, and you're probably working below the threshold level where you would see some sort of progress. What should they do more of? I think it's pretty clear, you know, mobility stuff, just making sure that you move effectively and efficiently and optimally. You know, when you talk about the influence of your upper back posture relative to how the shoulder functions, you can't do enough of that stuff because you're constantly battling it outside the gym. You come in with all these postural issues from 23 hours outside the gym, and you to try to correct it in 1 hour is really hard to do. So the mobility stuff becomes very important.
As far as things that, you know, I'd love to see people stop doing, really, I still train in a commercial gym. I won't be here hopefully for too much longer. I've been putting away all my nickels and dimes trying to save up so I can start my home gym here, and I think it's going to become a reality here soon. But, you know, as far as a commercial gym goes, the thing that I would love to see people stop doing is body part splits. You know, I mean, we make fun of it all the time, and, you know, we think that hopefully there's a more educated culture out there, but unfortunately there's still a ton of people. I would guess like 80% of the people that go to commercial gyms are still doing body part splits. You know, I see the guys that are in there and they do every imaginable chest exercise over the course of an hour and a half. And you just wonder, you know, well, you did all that. Are you going to do that same workout for your upper back here in 2 or 3 days? And the chances are they're probably not. Or the same thing with their legs. Are they going to train their legs that hard in 3 or 4 days? And, you know, it just never happens. So not only do they need mobility from, you know, a training perspective just in general, but to counteract all the stuff that they're doing with poor training. You know, their programming just really isn't all that good. So, I mean, mobility beyond the behavior modification aspect of it to just to kind of counteract a lot of what they're doing in the gym that is, you know, aiding to even worse posture. And when Mike Boyle did his presentation at Ryan Lee's seminar, he said the three things that guys do not need any more of when they go to a gym are bench presses, curls, and, you know, biking, because they're in those kind of positions all the time. So why are we reinforcing that with what we do in the weight room? So when you think about it in that regard, it's really true. You know, we need to kind of use our gym time to counteract what we're doing the other 23 hours of the day. And as far as things we need to do more of, obviously Bill touched on it, mobility stuff. You know, and I don't say that just because I have two mobility products out now, and beyond the Ass Master, I'm also known as the mobility guy. But, you know, I mean, I'm okay with that too, you know, it's whatever. But, you know, people need more mobility. And I see so many people now, I mean, even 18-year-old kids. I've got a 16-year-old kid that I won't even let squat with a barbell on his back because he's so tight. Even when he tries to squat with just the barbell on his back, I mean, he's nowhere near parallel and his back's rounding. He's so tight and so immobile, you know, he's putting himself at risk of injury. And if I let him do that, then I'm not doing my job as a coach. So even if we can just improve mobility with our clients and with our athletes, we're going to see a huge payback and huge dividends. So that's something that I would always include in their workouts.
Amen.
Is that something that you find that people are very tight and they don't even have any sense of it? Like for me, example, I had no sense that my calves were tight. Are you finding that in your clients as well, that they're just oblivious to it?
Most definitely. I think just as a culture, we're not very in tune with our bodies. You know, we do have some people that are the total right side of the spectrum where any little ache or pain they notice, but a lot of my clients don't even know they have an issue until I start pointing it out to them. You know, for instance, I just started with a new client the other day, and he's had a history of low back herniations, neck herniations. It took me off of about 20 seconds looking at his posture to realize how tight he was. And so I started giving him some specific stretching exercises for his hamstrings. He was in posterior tilt. So I started working on his hamstrings, started working on some psoas activation stuff. And he was amazed. He's like, wow, I didn't even realize all this was a problem. So that's the thing. They don't realize. They just know that they have an issue, whether it's back pain or neck pain or something like that. They don't realize that the true issues lie elsewhere in their body, and that's kind of our job as performance coaches or physical therapists to help show them what they need to do and give them the tools necessary to fix their body up and feel better.
Yeah, a lot of this just comes from being sedentary. You know, we've shifted so far, you know, towards immobility that a lot of people don't recognize that they lack mobility because they're not challenged. And when somebody comes to us and they're there for exercise-related programming, and we're going to challenge them to be in postures and perform movements that they just haven't performed in such a long time, that then it becomes apparent to them that they lack mobility.
All right. Hopefully I found that clip and it was great. Otherwise, we just transitioned right into us talking again.
Or you could play some delightful mood music.
Yeah, the interview with Chris Bell that we did for Bigger, Stronger, Faster was really good.
That was a really good one, yeah.
That was a get. I'm very happy we were able to get him on the... Took me like 800 emails in between me and his like the PR for the movie to get him on.
It's a great movie. And that was amazing, too, that movie, especially considering what happened to his brother.
Long. Yeah.
And that was just... That movie's just really... It's a provocative movie.
We should say that one of his brothers did die. If people didn't catch it, which is really sad. But I don't know. It seems like we've named a lot of our episodes Turkey something, which is interesting. As I look down the iTunes feed. That's one thing that we do that a lot of people don't do is that we have every single one of our episodes in our iTunes feed, and it makes our RSS file like friggin' gigantic. But I think if I listened to a podcast, I would want to be able to just download all the episodes at once.
I guess I'm getting a phone call.
All right. Well, should we pause or?
Oh my God! Yeah, let's pause it, please.
All right, guys, so that's going to do it. John wasn't able to come back, so I just want to quickly again mention that we have a great episode coming up for number 200 with Dan John, Alan Aragon, and Lou Schuler. Send in your questions ASAP to questions@thefitcast.com. We're going to make sure to ask as many as we possibly can in the time that we have with each guest. So it's probably going to be about a two-hour-long episode, and hope you guys all enjoy it. So, as always, don't forget to head to thefitcast.com. Right now you're going to see our brand new redesigned website. We're going to have tons of new content for you for real this time. And again, as always, don't forget to check us out on iTunes, subscribe, leave a review, and tell your friends, your family, tell your dog, anyone who has access to a laptop or any kind of computer. Thanks again for listening. As always, we'll see you next week.
All right, we're in the off-topic discussion for episode 199.5. I'm with Jonathan Fass. What's up, Jay Fass?
See, the joy of the half episodes are basically we're not ready for the Monumentous episode, so we're going to record a half episode.
Halfsies.
It's such a cop-out, and I love it.
Yep, totally.
I'm fully with it, dude.
Cool. So for some off-topic stuff, it is we're recording on Black Friday here in the United States, and basically that means people go to the malls and fight over things like laptops and plasma televisions and
Cabbage Patch Kids,
Tickle Me Elmos, Turbo Man. If you've seen Jingle All the Way with Arnold Schwarzenegger and Sinbad, yeah. Artist formerly known as Sinbad.
Nice. Wow. Yeah, that was pretty good.
It's got to get me a Turbo Man.
And sadly, I did see the end of that movie, and I don't know why.
F you, dude. I saw that in the effing theater when I was a kid. I was like, oh, even as a kid, I'm like, wow, this is shit.
Yeah. Well, I just saw it. I saw it more recently, like within the last like 2-3 years, and I've got to assume that it was on like TNT, and I was like, what the hell is this? And I watched it long enough to realize what it was, and yeah.
Yeah.
I think that was the point where he was actually dressed up like the Turbo Man or something.
Yeah. So in the Black Friday fashion, I've spent about $300 and some odd dollars today on on stuff. I bought about 7 games, 6 movies, and I bought some other stuff on the prelude to Black Friday yesterday. They had some like Thanksgiving Day deals. I'm being pretty reserved this year. I'm trying not to buy too much.
You have gone a little nutty in the past.
Last year, I probably
went nuts. Last year,
I spent maybe $800 on Black Friday and stuff. I bought some gifts for other people, but you know, I spent quite a bit on myself.
But it is genius. I mean, it's now that you do the internet, it's just so easy just to click.
Oh yeah, people who go out, I think they're crazy. Unless you got to buy clothes, like that's I think going to like Best Buy, all their sales were online as well. Unless you need a TV, like all their games and movies and like their small electronics, you can all get online. So since I just bought a 50-inch plasma, I don't really need a TV at this point. Although I might get one for the bedroom. I don't know. But anyways, I sold 2 of my arcade machines, my Outrun and my Area 51, to some friends of mine. And I turned half of my den / arcade into an actual office. So, growing up a little bit again.
Big boy pants.
Yeah, totally put on my big boy pants. 2 legs at a time. I just jumped right in. So, got that going.
By the way, if you'd like to know my secret to not buying too much crazy crap on Black Friday, I just keep that little stock ticker window open all day and just watch the stocks tumble today. So,
oh, was it bad today?
Nah, it wasn't that bad of a market, but it wasn't super. It's like a lot of worries about the European, the debt with Spain, and it
I heard Ireland asked for some money.
They're just Euro right now. Like Europe is just it's not terribly looking so great. So stocks kind of, it wasn't that bad, but
yeah, but this is America, John. We'll be fine.
Yeah, exactly.
Everybody's buying plasmas today. It's a good year. So that's cool. Picking up the dog comes tomorrow. Flies in tomorrow.
Sweet.
Marty. Coming in.
Marty.
Very excited. Very, very, very excited.
I'm excited for you, dude. That's cool.
I cannot contain my excitement. We're all stocked up on dog food. I got 2 dog beds. One, unfortunately, from the golden that we lost earlier in the year. But it's good to have the hand-me-downs. You know, it's good to. Same thing. We got a crate. He's crate trained right now. I'm hoping to wean him off it pretty quickly. Because I just don't want to keep a dog in a crate. You know. So that is the big thing that is going on this weekend. I literally cannot wait for tomorrow. I had trouble sleeping last night again because I'm so excited about tomorrow. Tonight's going to be a wreck, and then there's no way I'm going to sleep tomorrow night. Totally. I mean, screw, this is way better than Christmas.
Of course.
I probably watched that video of him like 20 times. Easy. Also, one other thing, we got a brand new redesign going on the Fitcast. It's like halfway done. We still got some work to do, but we'll announce that stuff later in this show. Or I guess you already heard it, but we'll talk about that before we start riffing.
Right.
And I don't know. I think that might be
it.
About it. I got the girlfriend to watch Doctor Who the other night, and she liked it. And I was like,
"Did she like it?
Holy crap!" Yeah.
I'm not a Who fan, man.
It's really good. I mean, my brothers and sisters over in the UK know what's up. But the like that is probably one of the most well-produced shows, out right now. And it was even cool that. We're probably going to watch Crank this week.
Wow.
If I can get her to like Crank and be like, no, baby, Jason Statham's sexy. It's all right. You can think it. I'll think it too. He's a good looking dude. So that's it. And I think we are, I don't know, John, do you have anything else? Did you meet any presidents or ex-presidents today?
Not this week, but we are having a trip back to the States. It was a like last minute, hey, let's go take a couple days. He's got Mystery Boss has some business stuff to do, so we're going to be in the States for a couple days. So that's pretty awesome. It was like, hey, by the way, did you hear? So I can't really say exactly where just yet, but once we get there, then I can.
Cool. Yep. And last thing I wanted to quickly mention is, I was actually going to ask you, do you have any tips for new dogs? Because I know you're a dog lover.
I am a dog lover.
I talked to Lee. I got some tips from her the other day.
I don't know. Put me on the spot. I mean, I'm a big believer of, like, you know, training the dog early and often.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that's what I would do. I mean, you know, you have to let the dog kind of settle to the environment. Don't be all up in his grill and just let him kind of explore the area, get comfortable, get used to you, that sort of thing. But you can, you know, then start to, have you trained dogs?
Have I trained dogs personally?
Yeah.
Not really. I mean, the last time we got a dog, I was like a little kid, so.
Right. Yeah. No, it's really important to train them early, because it basically gives you, it's a bond to the dog, and it also, you know, a dog's life is not supposed to be just sitting around doing nothing, you know what I mean? So good exercise, good socialization, you know, labs are easier like that. There are other breeds that you require a little bit more attention in terms of like socialization and exercise, but you still need to pay attention to that, and training goes a long way, because when you're giving them tasks and things to do, I mean, that's part of dog's nature.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So it actually, you know, I've seen huge differences between the dogs that I know that, you know, are trained well, and they you know, are good with commands, and they get rewarded for things, and there's a nice interaction, versus dogs that are just like, you know, sitting on the couch all day and you don't do anything with them. You know what I mean? So I guess that'd be my only advice. I didn't have a list prepared.
Okay, that's cool.
Yeah, but if you don't have any experience, I mean, there's a lot of good stuff. Obviously, there's, like, you know, things on Animal Planet. Dog Whisperer, I am not a huge fan of.
Because he goes, psh, 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 psh.
Yeah, right. No, his methods are actually questioned. If you do the reading about the kinds of things that he does, he does more of a negative reinforcement kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not what they believe is the best way to train. And so actually a good show is it's Me or the Dog, I think it's called. She does a really nice
job. I've seen that. I saw that on
TV. Yeah, it's a really good show, actually. It's a stupid name, and you're like, that sounds like it's a lame show, but it's actually really good. But she's actually, was gone through, like, training and stuff, and apparently that's exactly the way you're supposed to train dogs now. So it's more of a positive reinforcement thing. So stock up on little.
I got that shit. Don't worry. I got the training. I got the training bits or whatever they are. They're like mini cookies.
Nice. But definitely buy, you know, like, you know, Training Dogs for Dummies kind of thing, because it is amazing, you know, how consistent good training. Like, one of my friends, she's incredible with her dogs. Like, and it's just something, she just learned it, how to do it herself, and she her dogs that she's owned are just like incredible. It's just amazing how good she is with them. So it's a really worthwhile thing to take the time to learn.
Very cool. Thank you for the advice.
I hope it's helpful.
So I think we will stop there for the off-topic this week. I will wrap it up by saying go see the new Rock movie Faster. It looks awesome, right up my alley, and hopefully yours. And got to support the Rock, man.
Yeah, I'm not really. Actually, what I do want to see is The King's Speech. Dude, you know what? Dude. And that's why your brain remains small. That's why. Well, let's compare, you dickhead. Let's compare. King's Speech is at 91%, and the Box Crap is at 43%. You know. Go ahead and go. go see Harry Potter. That's 70.
You know what? Actually, I saw last night I saw it was on like HBO, like one of the Harry Potter movies. I think it was like the Blood Prince or whatever. Or whatever it is. I don't know, whatever it is.
The further they've gone, the better they seem to be. Like, I saw the first one.
Well, it looks more badass. Like, it didn't look like a kid's movie. It looked more like,
the first
S is about to hit the fan.
The worst thing that I've ever seen in my life, and I think I lasted, like, 12 minutes watching that thing. And
skip the first movie. If I haven't read the book, can I skip the first movie and go right into the second movie?
I just looked it up on Wiki. So,
to find out what happens?
Yeah, I mean, because the first one, from what I can tell, just kind of introduces the character and what the concepts are. The second and the third ones on a flight.
Mm-hmm.
I was looking around. I was like, all right, I'll give the, you know, because everybody who's a fan of this series is like, you got to get through. Yeah, the first one isn't so good, but then you keep watching, it gets better, and it kind of does. To the point where the second one was okay. I was like, all right, that was okay. And I watched the third one, and I was like, that was actually a pretty good movie. And it just seems to – apparently they just get better and better as they get older, because then it gets, like, more involved in the plot. And the whole concept is, like, you know, this, like, evil wizard that's trying to kill this guy. So that's not the most childish, you know, of plot lines. So the older that he gets and the closer that he gets to this, like, you know, now the final chapter of it, apparently it gets more and more dark and whatever. And, yeah, it's kind of interesting. So I don't know. I honestly, like, I probably wouldn't watch it except for the fact that when I do fly home, it's like, you know, it's like a half a day of flying. So I've got just hours to kill on a flight. And I'm like a 3-hour movie, I'm good with that.
Cool.
Yep.
All right.
Don't take my word for it.
I won't. Oh, my God. Tony's like, yes, I'm seeing it on, like, Saturday or something. Like, awesome, Tony. I'm going to go tell the internet. He's going to try to make an appearance for the 200th episode.
That would be lovely.
See, I don't know. You know, I'm trying to fit it in between my Magic Card competition and my Lord of the Rings marathon. We watch it once through all three movies, and we watch them again with the director's commentary. So that, you know, that, I mean, that's a lot of dedication.
It's not going to be on now. Now you've done it.
And then I like to go watch the latest Naruto. Because it's okay. Alright, so that is going to be it for the off topic. I hope you guys stuck around for the actual podcast.